everybody. Thanks for joining me or tuning in or listening to the recording again, wherever you are. And just, well, I spoke to Paul, my guest, Paul Morgan Summers, a couple of weeks ago. And so it's a recording that I'm going to be playing in a moment or two. But when I was speaking to him, I was just coming out of a bad case of man flu. And with all the guys know what that's like, it's really, really quite serious stuff. And most women don't really understand how serious it is. I actually read somewhere recently that I think if a woman was impacted with the man flu, like a man was, it would kill them instantly. So it is different. It is different, apparently. Anyway, because I was a bit feverish when I was speaking to Paul, I forgot to mention and thank two ladies who've been working very hard, who I've been working with, but they've been working very, very hard on an event that's coming up here in Spain called the Viva event. So I want to say a big thank you to my partner Sheila Massand and Sue Pankowicz, because they've been doing a lot of work in preparation for the event, which is going to be a people helpers, in many ways a people helpers event here in Spain, helping them avoid burnout as they're helping their clients. And it's also based around, largely around the three principles understanding. So if anybody's interested in that, just check out my website. There'll be stuff on there about that later on. So again, a big thank you to Sue and Sheila for all the work they've been doing. Okay, so on with my conversation with Paul.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Jones here again with the Ice Cream for the Soul Blog Talk Radio Show. And it's all exciting here today. I'm really rubbish with technology, and I'm actually trying to record this today on Zoom. I mean, people have been doing Zoom for ages, and I'm not even doing the video, we're just doing the audio, so it's one step at a time. Anyway, my guest today is somebody who I've been looking forward to speaking to on the show for well over a year, and finally it's happening, and my guest is Paul Morgan Summers, and I met Paul, well, I heard about Paul firstly from my partner Sheila, who met him over a year ago in London at a Three Principles event. And I heard about what such an intriguing man he was. And then he came to visit us. He was doing dropping off at a few people in Spain, and he came to stay with us, and we spent some time with Paul here in Spain. And, well, I'll just, before I bring him on, I'll read you his bio that I've got. Oh, no, I won't, because this is where the technology is. I was just about to minimize my screen then, Paul, and it won't let me. So I'm not going to read his bio. I know I should have practiced this before. Sheila, pulling her out. So anyway, Paul, I'll forget reading your bio because I can't get to it. I have to stop the recording to get to the screen. So, well, how are you doing, Paul? I'll bring you on eventually.
I'm very well, Mark.
It's lovely to finally speak with you on the air as such, even though this is recording. Yeah. It'll be going out on the air. So, well, I was going to read your bio out then, and I know it's not always necessarily your favourite thing to go into stories, and perhaps we'll dive into that as we get deeper into the conversation. But just to give people a sense of who you are and where you've come from, and what you've been up to, would you mind sharing your story with us?
Yes, certainly, Mark. Anyway, it's lovely to chat to you again.
I know I say every week to my guests, and sometimes it can sound a bit like, oh, cliched, but I always really do enjoy speaking to the guests who I have on. I pick the people who I want to come on very carefully, so it's great to have you on here. Great to have you on here. Anyway, I'll shut up now and let you get a word in.
Well, thank you anyway for inviting me to the show.
All right.
And I apologize that it's taken you quite a while to pin me down.
No, it's okay.
Okay, so, well, my bio is just a story anyway, so I'll have to tell you some more stories.
Okay.
I, as you said, I don't normally do this when I'm talking with people. Hmm. As people tend to put an importance on them, which is really a distraction to what is being said. But I'll keep my story, I think, to the bits that pertain to the reason you wanted to talk with me. Is that okay?
Yeah, definitely.
I live in Wales. I don't know if many people know where Wales is. in a county called Pembrokeshire. which is a coastal county. I live by the sea. And apparently it's got the best, second best coastal walk in the world, I am told. So because I've lived here, the ocean has always been part of my life, I suppose, and certainly part of my story. And it was the first word I used to express this, like this freedom, this beingness that occurred to me when I was in my teenage years. It's really trying to express something which I've never been able to put into words. But paradoxically, all these words are it anyway. And it's quite funny when I talk about this, because it feels like it's the very first time I talk about it. Such a wonderment, really, in what's being pointed at. That often, if I go quiet, just tell me, because sometimes words just fall away. Please give me a nudge if that happens.
Okay.
As a youngster, really, my passion was football, and I think you share the same passion. And at 16 years old, I was given the opportunity to go and play football professionally as an apprentice at Cardiff City Football Club. However, before I went there, I was training one day at home, and I suddenly stopped, and a very strong sense arose inside me to go and sit quietly somewhere where I wouldn't be disturbed. I think I was about 15 now. So I found a place and sat down, and again, all these things are very difficult to put into words, but as near as I can express it, my character, my body was just engulfed with a sense of beauty and peace, with a sort of stillness that was full of an utter brilliance. And I think this was the beginning of a period of about a couple of years during which I used to sit quietly many, many times, and so many so-called spiritual experiences happened over this period. And the funny thing about these experiences, they began to totally collapse everything I thought I knew, that I thought I knew about myself, and indeed everything I thought I knew to be solid, like time and space, and everything was caused by something else. In a sense, like the energetic sense of a separate identity called Paul just began to collapse, I suppose. And well, there were so many experiences, many I forget, experiences where I began to see events before they happened. There were many states of peace and wonderment and rapture, in a way. There were sort of like wonderful perfumes and wonderful energetic colours that moved and poured through me. Times when energies were released in the body, which were so full on that I used to think, blinking heck, I'm not sure if my body can handle this. Because it felt like it might blow a fuse. Later I learnt, I'm sure many people know, this term or this concept called Kundalini. So possibly what was being experienced related to that. Again, there were so many, there were times when the sense of like being located in the body was gone. And then the body was located inside like a wider spatial identity. So there was like a larger spatial sense of a separate me with a physical body in the middle, which I which was quite a shock at the time. A lot of these were quite a shock at the time, but yeah. but I kept all these experiences to myself.
Right. This was all while you were still a boy, pretty much, as well.
Yeah, 15, 16.
Yeah.
Over that period. I didn't have any words to express them, really. And my family were business people, so I knew they wouldn't understand. if I try to tell them. And probably they'll just worry about me and probably get me to see a doctor or someone else. So these experiences continued. And as I said, they were changing everything I knew about myself. And they felt extremely powerful for my body to absorb as well. But even though they were powerful and there was so much going on, there was underneath them all, there was a real sense of peace, like a boundless peace that just collapsed any sense of concern I had or sense of something being wrong. So I felt quite comfortable keeping all these experiences to myself.
Right. Yeah, because I was going to ask you, would that could be for some people, it might have sounded like it must have been frustrating not to be able to share what such beauty sounds like was happening to you, but you was at peace with that, not being able to share it as well then.
Well, there was no, I can't remember there being any frustration.
Right.
I think the experiences were so full on. And I, as I said, I didn't have the words for them really. So a desire to share didn't, I can't remember that arising at all. It's almost like I just had to sit with them or go through them, because there was such an overwhelming, as I said, sense of well-being beneath them all that it just seemed cool, even though they were very weird.
Right.
Because my family weren't religious or anything, so there was no framework inside me to understand or make any sense of them, really. So I just sat with them and just went. It's like surfing a wave, I suppose. I just was on this wave of energy and I just surfed it, or it surfed me. I'm not sure which way around to put it.
Yeah.
Because I remember at some point I began to see like an ocean of energy, really. And this ocean of energy was everything. It was appearing as everything. And it was everywhere and everything. And it was actually the space between things as well. As if it had condensed into the forms I was seeing and experiencing. And that experience went on for months. I felt like a child, really, playing in this ocean of energy, just like a kid on the beach, or a kid on a football field. It was just a wonderment about it.
It sounds beautiful, Paul.
Yeah, even though it was very new, it all felt familiar, which was. I know it sounds a bit of a paradox, but it was like that. It was like new to my experience or my understanding, but it was very familiar to my body, if that makes any sense.
Would you equate it a lot? There's a lot of use of the word waking up or awakening, and I imagine when people are in a dream and then they suddenly wake up, there's no surprise. It's just suddenly, oh, I was dreaming. Kind of thing. Could you relate it to that kind of thing?
Yes, you could say that, and it's pretty full on. It's like, you know, I suppose if you wake up in the morning and switch your bedroom light on, the room just goes light. It's just the contrast between the one and the other is huge.
Yeah.
So it's not subtle.
Right.
It wasn't subtle in that sense. So yeah, you could say there was a waking up. Although again, at that time, I didn't have that sort of concept inside me.
Yeah.
So that, I say, carried on for a long time. But I still moved to Cardiff to play football.
Right.
Because I was still following my boyhood dream. It is funny because even though all this was happening, I still loved to play football.
Right. Okay. That didn't drop away straight away.
No. And really, even now, every time I see a football, I want to chase after it. I mean, the instinct is still there in my body to play football. It's It never really left. But when I was there playing football, it changed in the sense that that boyhood dream or that boyhood thirst of becoming a professional footballer, that all began to fall away.
Right.
Well, not only that, everything began, again, as I said before, relating to the story of a sense, of an energetic sense of me, began to fall away. And with it, the sense of, although this sounds a bit strange, the sense of time and space was also falling away.
Mm.
And the sense that there was someone with free will, a separate someone with free will and choice, was falling away. So it was like an energetic experience. And in that, the sense of me was losing everything, it felt at the time.
Right.
It was losing my story, the story of Paul, really. But again, there was such a sense of well-being in this, and wonderment.
Mm.
The feeling of losing everything was strange in one side, but really fun in another way.
Right.
In a way, the energy that was just everything, it almost like became like one to my character at that time. It's almost like a boundless soccer game. It just became very, very playful.
Okay.
Just a sheer wonderment about it. It was a great game, and you're fully engrossed in it.
Right. Yeah.
And there's no sense of wanting to stop it or
just playing it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just awesome.
Right.
So that sense of being a professional football player, of it. Just left, really. So I left Cardiff City, then I went home and returned home.
I'm just curious, what were your parents thinking about that at the time? Because I suppose that's a great opportunity for a young lad to get a place on Cardiff City, for example.
Well, yeah, my dad was a great sports person.
Right. I know what my dad would have said to me. He would have gone mad. Sorry, go on, Paul.
Yeah. I don't know how good they were, you know, they were cool, and
right.
Especially mum wasn't interested in sport at all.
Right.
She was very much is very much a business lady.
Okay.
So sport wasn't really a proper job in her head.
Right. Okay.
I think. And dad was just a very loving dad. He was just supportive, and you know, he just thought, well, it didn't work out, you gave it a go. Try something else.
Right.
So I came home. They were happy to have me home, really.
Right.
But for my character, everything was different then.
Right.
It was all the same, but again, I can't put this into words. Everything was different.
Mm.
I often use the phrase, it was just like stillness was dancing.
I've heard you say that many times. Yeah.
And the what I thought or used to be the ordinary was just suddenly full of wonderment. It's like everything changed.
Mm.
I can't put this into words, Mark. Never have been. It's been almost 40 years now.
Mm.
I still feel like a baby trying to describe it.
But can I just interrupt you there? I think if you might have been going in this direction, and if you didn't want to go in this direction, it doesn't matter. But
okay.
did there come a point when you started to wonder what all this was, what all was happening, and didn't you take a trip to London? I don't know if you was going to go, wanted to go in that direction with this.
Yeah, I can go on to that.
Yeah.
I
think people would find that interesting.
Okay. Well, when I was home, it's like this experience of everything being this ocean of energy. At some point, if I can say that, something happened to that energy. And the only way I can try to describe it. Is that like it became luminous? It is almost like self-luminous. And in that luminosity, the sense that there was a separate me, a separate someone, you know, called Paul, just utterly fell away.
Right.
And then there was just life. There was no sense of anyone having a life anymore. There was just life. And life was just full on, because it was boundless. And it was in this self-luminosity, it's utterly obvious that it's, you know, this phrase that sometimes you hear, it's literally no thing appearing to be everything.
Yeah, I've had that experience myself. Yeah. Not even know momentarily.
It's wordless in a way.
Mm.
Literally, this no thing is simultaneously everything.
Mm.
And there's just this timeless luminosity, which has, you know, all the opposites, the whole concept of a beginning or an end, all that just is no more. Because it's, again, it's obvious that everything is just one thing, and it's utterly absent in another sense, or this no thing that people try to point towards.
Yeah.
I keep, when I chat, I keep going on about this no thing that's everything. So I made up a word called neverything.
Yes, yes.
Which I related to the track that hopefully we're doing later on this year.
So we'll call this call the everything.
Yeah, because it's
conversation.
For my characters, it's easier to say and more fun than saying nothing and everything. Everything. And this everything is just utterly complete and utterly whole and absolutely free.
Mm.
It's all these analogies, the formless that appear in its forms. It's timeless, appearing as time. This stillness, moving, silent, singing. It's unitary, so there's no opposite.
Yeah.
Yet it appears as all opposites.
It's
like it's an unconditional love affair, but for no one. It's just absolute freedom. And everything, like a coffee cup, a tree, a person, a body, a thought, a feeling, all are boundless and luminous. It's just simply everything, this no thing appearing as all these things.
Mm.
Like a tree is just no thing treeing. A person is no thing personing. You know, a thought is no thing thoughting. Mm. They're all free. And the funny thing, it's all uncaused. There is only this luminosity, there's only no thing happening, apparently.
Mm.
There is only everything. Just this, there's just this.
Mm. I think I mentioned this to you when you was here was it back end of last year or early this year? Time goes by so quick. No, it was in
January, I think.
It was so warm when you were here. That's why I thought it was at the back end. But I briefly mentioned before that I had a momentary experience of the nothing and everything.
Yeah.
And now it occurred to me, it was just a very momentary thing of nothing. Nothing's happening. But on a deeper level, it's like nothing is happening.
Yeah. It's a paradox.
Yeah.
And in that, on an intellectual and a conceptual level, it's an utter mystery.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's some people who'd be listening to this conversation think, what are these two nutters talking about?
Well, you can imagine almost like, I don't know, it's almost 40 years ago that this occurred. And it is like it was before Google or the internet.
Yeah.
And so... You couldn't even talk about this, really. There's so much more available now than back then. YouTube and all sorts of things and books being published.
Yeah.
There was I was just this Welsh young lad playing in this ocean of everything.
Right.
I did try to find out. Somebody told me about, I think what you asked before, told me there's the biggest bookshop in the world in London, and it was called Foyles. There's no bookshops where I live.
Literally no bookshops where you live, no?
Yeah, no. Right. No, there are some little local light. I live in a very sleepy place.
Right.
There's only some libraries which with very limited books. But anyway, I thought I'd try to find out if anybody had ever written anything about this wonderment.
Right.
This and everything. Anyway, so I jumped on a train and went to, I think I was about 16, I must have been then, I'm not sure. I jumped on a train and went to London, and I made a few trips to Foyles Bookshop.
Right.
To try to find anything written about this.
So where did you even go to start? Did you go to religion, or did you see it as religious? Or I'm just curious, for example, when you got in there, did you have any idea what to ask for?
In a sense, there was no... It was just life at the time, so I didn't even think about religion or spirituality or these words that I'm much more familiar with now. My life up to that point, before all this kicked off, was just football. But anyway, when I was in Foyles, I was told about another bookshop called Watkins. I don't know if you've ever heard of them.
No.
Apparently, they specialise in books on spiritual and philosophical writings from all around the world.
Okay.
And they've been there since 1893.
Wow.
And I think it was there that I picked up some books called the Upanishads.
Right.
Which come from the Vedantic tradition of the Vedas within India. And they're very old writings, BC sort of time.
Yeah.
And in them, I just found the nearest expression in words that I'd come across pointing to what was happening in my character or to my character, about this wonderment, or, about everything, about this no thing appearing as everything. So that was the first time outwardly I'd found any communication with regard to what was blatantly obvious to my character at that point.
Right. So was there some relief there then, knowing that it just wasn't you that was having this experience? I know whether you were use the word you very lightly.
Yeah, there was no sense of relief. It was just fun.
Okay, right.
It was literally, like I said, it's like playing, it's like a kid on a beach.
Right, okay.
It was fun. There was just a joy in finding those writings and reading them. Again, like most books, you have to, there's lots of... what I often call sweet nonsense in them.
Right.
But in between the sweet nonsense, there's just some beautiful use of words which are really pointing to something which is not in the words.
Yeah.
And it's very beautiful. And at the time, I was just excited, and it was just so joyful to find them. And it is there, I think, that somebody told me that there was a monastery near London that talked about or was influenced by the Upanishads. So on another trip, I actually went there then and rang the front doorbell and just asked to speak with someone. And I was taken to meet, as it turned out, an Indian monk, or a sannyasin in their tradition, they're called.
All right, yeah.
Yeah, who was a boss. He was the boss there.
Yeah.
And this was my first experience of speaking to such a guy, such a character. And he just said, well, something very natural had happened to me and to my body. And that it would be a good idea for me to come and live at the monastery for a while if I would like to. So I thought, great. So I went home and over a short period, sorted some things out, and just one day wrote a letter to my family and left it on the kitchen table, saying I was going to live in this monastery and for them not to worry. It just felt, it was just such a wonderment and playfulness at the time. I didn't really think, as you can imagine, it was one heck of a shock for my parents.
Yeah.
And extremely tough for them to accept. They could not understand it, really, of why this football boy would want to move suddenly to a monastery. And it was utterly, especially at that time, impossible for me to explain it to them.
So you didn't have the words that you have now then? You couldn't have even expressed it at all?
No. And there was no sense of wanting to express it. Cause
okay, right.
It.
Yeah.
Because it was whole and complete, there was no sense of a need to do anything, if that makes any sense. There was just playfulness. There was just energy playing. And at the same time, although this sounds a bit weird, the energy plays, but also at the same time, nothing is happening. That's quite a tough one to hear.
Yeah.
But it's, I apologize, but that's just the way it is.
Yeah, I think as soon as words are tried to use to explain something that's just unexplainable.
Yeah,
stepping into duality to try and point to non-duality, non-duals.
Literally. Well, words really, you know, come from time, and what's being pointed to is timeless. So in that sense, time and the timeless can never come together. They can, time will never hear the timeless. But again, paradoxically, the words are it as well. So the question and the words are singing their own answer. They are their own answer. Again, it's just difficult to explain. But yeah, but as you say, at the end of the day, it's impossible to put into words. It's the funny thing, it's too simple to put into words. As soon as you get a word, it's lost. It's like trying to capture the air with your hands. It's impossible. But quite fun to do.
Yeah, and there seems to be, well, just I've been around people who've had similar experiences as you, and I'm sure not everybody are impacted by these kind of people, but there comes, I think I heard George Pransky once talk about Sydney Banks, and he said it was like listening to an expert mechanic talk about his job, but I had no idea what he was talking about, but I was absolutely sure he did. And in some ways, I find that when I'm listening to like you or some of the wonderful three principles facilitators that are out there, or Muji, I don't always understand what they're saying, but I know he does, or they do, or you do. And they're doing the best to point.
And
would you say that's what you're doing? You're doing the best to point?
Well, in a way, there's two things that go on. There's the listening to words, which in one way doesn't go anywhere. It just goes round in a loop. But also there's a hearing. So there's a difference between a listening and a hearing. And the hearing is, again, for want of better words, it's an energetic hearing. It's like a resonance. And it's heard somewhere else, not in the conceptual mind. It's literally, Mark, it's boundlessness. Hearing boundlessness, and there's a resonance. And in that resonance, something happens, which is it's a non-action at the end of the day. Like you can get like an action to improve if you call this real dream, you can do things to improve what's occurring. But the hearing of this is a non-action, in which basically sees the dream to be a dream. And that happens despite what the apparent individual is doing or not doing. It happens, you could say, on a wholly, completely different level. It's an energetic resonance of the boundless, in a sense, meeting the boundless. It's a love affair. It becomes a love affair, but for no one. And it's utterly unconditional. It's utterly free.
I quite often find myself lost for words when I'm speaking to you.
Well, it's good. That's what tends to happen. Chatting to people over the years is just questions and questions and questions. And in a way, questions are full of time and full of knowing. But the answers that come back, there's no answers in them. And in a sense, they're full of unknowing. And then below that is this energetic resonance that goes on. And in that, the person that thinks it's asking questions can fall out of themselves. But that, again, is not by their own volition. In one way, Mark, there's nothing personal about this. You could say it's an utterly impersonal movement of energy or resonance. But again, all these words, personal, impersonal, are all not it.
Yeah. But they're all that we've got to try and point to it, I suppose.
Well, to be honest, it can be pointed to in silence.
Yes.
You don't need words when you sit with someone. There can be a falling out of their... There can be the end of something that was never happening. And that can happen with words or without words. As I said, it's unconditional. It happens despite what the person thinks they know or thinks they don't know or thinks they're doing or thinks they're not doing. It happens despite all of that. It's unconditional. There's no cause.
And therefore no effect.
At the end of the day, yes. Because nothing's
happening.
Fearing happening. Over the years when this happens to people, I've noticed two things that happen. The noise that comes from people is either laughter or swearing. Because suddenly something's seen that was always the case.
Yeah.
It's like remembering something that was never forgotten. It's energy remembering its boundlessness. And then with that comes such wonderment that there's more often than not is just laughter or swearing. Like, blinking heck, it's always been here. Everything I've been searching for and reading books and traveling the world has been here all along. And it's, when that's seen, I think probably the only thing you can do is laugh or swear. But it's very beautiful when that happens, and when I see a character do that, it's just again, it's a bit like a football. I feel like doing a football jig and a football dance.
Sorry, go on, Paul.
It's just so beautiful when freedom happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, this is just a story because it never wasn't the case. But again, just using words, it's beautiful.
So, having said that, does it seem to be now there's more, I'm trying to choose the words to reflect what you've been saying.
Best of luck.
Yeah. No, well, not yet. I was just going to ask you a question about the apparent Paul. I think we've talked before, well, recently you've said there seems to be more of an urge to talk to people about this now. Because, well, when I first asked you if you'd like to come on the radio show, for example, you'd said, all right, thanks for the invite. You very politely said, no, sod off, no. No, you said, oh, thank you, but I don't have the urge to talk with people. Basically, you just said you didn't want to do it in a very nice way. But I know recently you've said to me there just seems to be desire is probably the wrong word, but there seems to be, it seems to be that you are talking to people more and more. You're just flowing with that, like you're still surfing the wave in many ways.
Yeah, in one sense, my character's not had the, I prefer just to chat to people almost like on a one-to-one basis.
Mm.
So to do like groups and radio shows, I've tended to be slightly averse to it.
Mm.
But, you know, over the last few years, like the asking has really, I've only talked about it when someone's asked about it.
Yeah.
Again, there's no need in that sense to talk because freedom, boundlessness and everything is already the case.
Yeah.
So within that appearance, that play, if questions come, then my character will respond with a reply. And just over the last few years, that asking has increased, I suppose, more and more from people from all over the place and from different countries.
Yeah, well, you do tend to impact people. If people do ask you the question, I know there's a few people I've met who've met you and they're like, as soon as your name's mentioned, they're going, wow, that guy. Even though they don't always necessarily understand what you're saying.
In one sense, I hope they don't understand.
Yeah.
Because what this is has no understanding in that sense.
Hmm.
No knowing. There's no nothing to know something else because everything is oneself. There's nothing other than that. So there's no need. There's no need for knowing. Again, all these opposites fall away. Knowing and unknowing, they just collapse as just conceptual ideas.
Hmm.
It's more simple. It's more simple than that. And it's so simple. It doesn't even need to have a knowing.
Hmm.
Again, it's unconditional. It's free. It doesn't need anything because it already is the case. You know, and you can't, because it is everything. I often say it's a bit mischievous, this and everything, because it appears to hide because it is everything.
Yeah.
But the me is, because it feels it's a something in time, located in space, is trying to deal with basically an energetic life that it's feeling separate from life. It feels separate. And in that separation comes a sense of unease or dissatisfaction. There's a feeling of there's something missing.
Mm.
And again, it depends on the character, on the sensitivity within them. Some people are quite happy with life and whatever they're doing. It's super cool. But other people, often, sometimes they have glimpses or an awakening which comes and goes. And that, in a way, opens up Pandora's box.
Mm.
Suddenly, they want that experience, what they think is that experience, back again.
Yes.
And they think it was a something. They think it was an experience which was a something. Because that's the only way a me can think, because it feels it's a something. It can only see a world full of somethings. So it'll go after a something, whatever it be, to feel whole again, to feel satisfied again. And it doesn't matter what that is. It can be sex, drugs, and rock and roll, being a professional football player.
Hmm.
Or it can be things people come across, religious ideas, spiritual ideas, therapy, and this thing called enlightenment.
Hmm.
And they think, oh, that's it. I need to get that. And that will answer my questions. That will make me feel whole again.
Hmm.
And the paradox is that what's being searched for isn't the something, it's everything. And that's, in a way, how it hides. Because it is everything, the me is too busy looking for something within it. Whereas it is, you can't get closer to everything, and you can't get further away from everything. It's just everything. Again, this is why laughter or swearing happens when it's seen. Because it's always been the case. But the me, thinking that it's separate from it, just goes round and around and around in circles.
Mm. Like a dog chasing its tail.
Yeah, until it doesn't. And then it realizes it never left home. It was always free. It was always complete. It's always whole.
Mm.
It's just this.
I heard you say quite a lot when you was here, Paul, that we'd perhaps be walking or just having a coffee by the seafront, and you'd say this is it. And I was, and there was that part of me that was going, what? and you're going this is it. And I'm going, what? I want you just, and there's always the ego always seems to want it broken down and explained and somehow, doesn't it?
The ego, in a sense, is just a symptom. The root of it is this energetic sense of being separate, and that is the veil, for want of a better word, that obscures what this is.
Hmm.
That's that energetic sense, which is. Isn't an ego thing or a conceptual thing. It's an energetic thing in the body. It feels separate. And with that sense of separation, it's very closely married to fear, really. There's a fear flavor in it as well. It feels like unless it finds something, it's not going to be able to feel whole. And on top of that, then, to help deal with that energetic lie, the me develops an ego, a character, to help make itself feel better in many ways. Like layers of an onion, but all those layers are just layers. They're not directly related to the underlying root, which is that energetic sense of being separate from life. Because basically, they can either, there's two, it's a bit like digital, zeros and ones. There can either be a sense of someone having a life, or there can just be life. And those two, you could say, are just worlds apart. There can be a sense of someone having thoughts, or they can just simply be thoughts.
Mm.
But when there's a sense of a me having a thought, or me experiencing a cup of coffee, or looking at the landscape, because that energetic veil is there, like you were saying earlier, well, no, that's not it, that's boring. That's not it. Mm. How can it be just this? Because it feels separate from this. It never sees the landscape, really. It never sees a tree. It just feels, because of that sense of separation, it just feels its own idea of it.
And I suppose, like you say, when the me is looking for it, even in all the thoughts, the me is just another thought as well, then, isn't it? Who you think you are is just more thought.
Yeah, it's an energetic sense of feeling separate. And it happens in a young baby or a young child. It's not like a sophisticated thought process. That all comes later with conditioning and education and everything else, and culturally. The whole story gets created of a me in time, living a life in a sequence of events. There's this experience, then this experience, then this experience. And I have to sort those experiences because I have to negotiate my life. And I have to make my life successful in however way that's perceived. So already it's like Alice in Wonderland down the rabbit hole. It's just millions and millions of stories, but they get built on top of this, again, I'll say, this energetic appearance. You know, an appearance being, it's not what it appears to be. It's just this energetic appearance just feels separate from life. And that's where the discontent or the sense of dissatisfaction originates. And it'll only go when it's no more. So again, the paradox for the seeker is it's looking for an absence of its own seeking. So what it's really looking for is the absence of itself. It's looking for its own absence. Because then the seeker's gone. It's just life. It's just everything. There's just boundlessness appearing to be everything, appearing to be time and space and all the names and forms within it. It's just this. If you run out into the sunshine, it's just this. You can't get away from it. There's only this. There's only everything. So you've never left home. There was a funny story going back to the monastery. Because when I moved there, my family weren't happy, to say the least.
Yeah.
She used to drive up there. But she used to sleep in her car outside,
right?
Because she would refuse to sleep within in the guest house.
Okay. Did she think it was in some kind of cult or something?
Yeah. Well, you can imagine all the fear in the story. Yeah. God knows what she would have created. And I can understand completely.
Yeah. Why. You've got two children yourself, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I remember we used to the boss monk in charge, we used to go to the curtains and slightly open the curtains back and look at her in the car. And I can remember he used to chuckle away. And because he said, "I really like your mum. She's, you know, to sleep in the car and make this stance." He loved the strength in her character.
Okay, right. Did he actually try and talk to her himself, the monk?
Yeah. Mum eventually spoke to him, but originally she, it was difficult to get her foot through the door, really.
Right.
But it was funny, in the end, she used to stay in the guest house, and all the other monks in the monastery used to say, "When's your mother coming again?"
Right.
And will she bring her homemade cake? She became famous for her homemade cake. Right, yeah. She was the most welcome guest from the perspective of the monks.
Right.
But the monastery is brilliant though, because I was a sleepy, this sleepy Welsh guy who I'd only met some few people really, and certainly not people from other countries. But at the monastery, in a sense, I travelled the world when I was there without leaving the monastery.
Yeah, because of all the characters that came.
Yeah, because the monk in charge was a doctor before he became a monk. And he was involved in building, like, health provision in the northern regions of India.
Oh, right.
I think in the region bordering Nepal.
Okay, yeah.
And, like, he was involved in receiving the Dalai Lama, the young Dalai Lama, when he fled Tibet.
Wow.
So he knew so many characters within different world religions. Mm. I think he was very much respected. And he ended up organizing all these private retreats for religious delegations to come together and like find common ground, all behind closed doors and in secret. And so I was fortunate to be part of that.
Wow.
So I met all these characters, like Dalai Lama and whatever, very informally.
Yeah.
So it was just great for me to experience all the different cultural backgrounds and the attitudes and all the different beliefs and all the stories that our characters create. Because we have to, I suppose, because the me is, at the end of the day, is a story in time. It's like an energy story in time, so it needs. It's not separate from the story. It is the story.
Mm.
No story, no me, and vice versa. So it is. I loved it.
I was just thinking, there's many youngsters go out and travel the world, and they say that's the best education, but it sounded like the world came to you in many ways when you were
there. Well, it is a lot cheaper. Because they all came there.
Yeah.
And I was, God. There were all sorts. There was amazing characters I met. There were mad characters, most opinionated people, beautiful people, you know, fanatical people, all sorts of people.
Yeah. But did you immediately know you was in the right place when you walked through the door, would you say?
Oh yeah, I was there for about 5 years, and it was 5 years of just laughter. It is magic. And all these characters, they were like different spices that made, like, living there, like the soup of living there, just so magical. And there's so many stories. There's so many stories I could tell from the monastery.
Well, I won't keep you much longer, Paul. But there's just one thing I did want to ask you about, and in many ways, I think you've been talking about it all the way through this conversation. But the last time we spoke a few weeks ago, you said something. And I won't go into the actual context of it, but you said a phrase which I was struck with afterwards, and I think you were talking to somebody, and you asked them, you said, is, correct me if I'm wrong, I think you said, you asked the person, is anything born in the sea? Is that a phrase you use?
Is anything born?
Or does anything die in the sea? It was either born or die. Or maybe I just totally misheard you.
Well, again, it's, when this is seen, all these concepts of birth and death fall away as well.
Mm.
Because in that sense, nothing dies because nothing has begun.
Mm.
I'm not sure the context in which I talked. Was it in relation to when my younger son...
That's it, yeah. I didn't want to actually... But if you, it was about that. I wasn't sure if you'd want to talk about the actual story, but I was impacted by it, because I kind of nodded and says yes, agreed with you at the time, and then I reflected on it afterwards, and I was quite impacted by the statement, I must say. Not the words. I think it was where it was coming from.
Yeah, and it literally exactly the same in that situation. There was a situation where, I suppose my son was the first time in his young life he'd come up against the possibility of his own mortality.
Hmm.
And a decision was being made, and he just turned to me in the A&E in the hospital and said, do you think I might die? And the response just came. I said, well, Angela, has anything ever been born? It was just an automatic response that came from my character. And because I said earlier on, I've always, with the boys, called this the ocean. So he knew, again, this is listening and hearing, he heard something. And with that hearing, there was a knowing. But when we turned back round and looked at the doctors, physical expressions on their faces, especially because we were refusing to do what they wanted us to do.
Right.
So, but now he's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
So it was out of that knowing came a feeling and a sense of not doing what the doctors were asking us to do at the time. So, but that, again, that's what just happened at that moment in time.
Well, Paul, we've been chatting for over an hour already. Just I'm pretty sure.
More stories.
Yeah. Well, maybe we could do this again another time. But I think it would be a good time to mention. Like I say, after dragging you onto the radio show, I also then managed to twist your arm. Many people have heard me talk about. I did the recent trek with Dr. Jack Pansky in April, which was really a great fun. And I asked Paul if he'd like to be my guest, in the next one, which is coming up in September. And Paul very graciously said accepted. And so if you've been touched or impacted by what Paul's been talking about today and you'd like to spend 3 days with us here in Spain, there's going to be a small group, about 14 of us all together. Well, we're going to be exploring the beautiful Spanish countryside. There's no agenda as such, probably just conversations like Paul have just been having just today. On the trail, and we'll just be chilling out in the Spanish sunshine. So if anybody's interested in that, just get in touch with me at Ice Cream for the Soul. Well, my new email is ICTS. I've got to write it down to see what it is. Yeah, these letters, I'm being a bit dyslexic. I've just changed my email, that's my excuse. It's ic4ts@hotmail.com. It's the initials for Ice Cream for the Soul. So if anybody wants to ask me about that, just get in touch with me there. There'll be more details coming up soon on Facebook and what have you. And also remember to my Facebook name, if you want to connect with me on there, is Yoga Mark. And would you be open to people getting in touch with you, Paul, or are you scared you might be inundated?
Well, I'm a bit careful, but if people have enjoyed what they've listened to and they'd like to find out more, they can contact me as well on an email.
Right.
And I'll get back to them as soon as I possibly can.
Okay.
I suppose I can give you my email, Mark, and you can put it.
Yeah, you can say it out loud, or I'll just put it with a link to this one.
Okay, well, it's neverything1, that's the number one.
Okay.
@icloud.com.
Okay.
And if anybody wants to get in touch and from listening to the show and discuss anything privately, then that's okay. I'll do that for the next couple of weeks, and then that's it.
Okay, yeah, because again with these things, there's only so much time in the day as well, isn't there? If you believe in time, of course.
Well,
We can get. I know myself, I can get very busy talking to people with Skype and then trying to do work as well. So understand. So Paul. It's been lovely to finally have you on here. Sheila sends her love from she's in the other room. She's looking forward to seeing you here in September.
Okay, please send my love to Sheila as well.
Yeah, I will do. So you just don't drop off the call. I'll end the recording and I'll speak to you in a moment. So okay. Thanks again, everybody, for for tuning in. I've not been having too many conversations lately because I've been so busy, but hopefully I'll start having a few more now, and it's been a great kickstart in many ways with Paul, having Paul as my guest this week. So thanks again for tuning in. Bye, everybody. Thank you.